This is The Wheel Weaves, a Wheel of Time podcast with no spoilers. Hey everyone, I'm your host Annie, and I'm the first-time reader going through this series chapter by chapter. As always, there's no spoilers past the chapter we're covering, and that means it's totally safe for first-time readers. I'm joined by my co-host Brett, who's a longtime fan, and he's guiding me on this journey. We'd like to thank and acknowledge our executive producers, Brandy Nairn Kirkwood, Sean McGuire, Yanis, Albert Lorenzo, Light-Blinded Fool, Green Man, Davis Ferreira, Margaret, Big C, Bennett Williamson, and Dylan C. And before we get into things today, we just want to say, yoo-hoo, big summer blowout! We are having a Patreon sale for the month of June in the year 2023, and that means that if you become an annual patron, you will get 2 months free instead of the usual 1 month free. So check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/thewheelweavespodcast if you're interested in supporting us over there. In this episode, we're talking about some of the prologue in Knife of Dreams.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. It's going to be broken into three parts. So the prologue is called Embers Falling on Dry Grass.
Right, which I have to talk to you about.
Yeah, okay.
Because...
right now?
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
We've had a prologue called this before.
Yeah, right, okay.
So I asked you to look it up for me.
Well, sort of. Not exactly it, this.
Basically, I was like, we for sure already had this whole, like...
it was a theme.
This ember,
yeah,
fire
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
As a theme for a prologue title.
Yes.
So okay. I said, were you impressed with me? Right away, I was like, Fires of Heaven, look it up.
Well, it makes sense. It's in the title of the book, Fire.
Fires.
Yeah, Fires of Heaven.
But then what's this one?
There's I don't
no
know.
Fire in this title.
Well, we can talk about that. But anyways, the theme from Fires of Heaven was the prologue was titled The First Sparks Fall. Then chapter one was Fanning the Sparks. And then at the end of the book, the second last chapter was The Threads Burn. The last chapter being Glowing Embers.
Embers. See? Yeah. I remembered it.
The word was used. Basically the same thing.
It's, yeah.
You
it's
got
the
me there.
Same. It's,
yeah.
It's basically saying things are starting.
Ooh, yeah.
This is how forest fires start.
Yeah, yeah, and it's good, so...
and crop fires.
Well, you know, anything you want to burn.
Any sorts of wildfires start when embers fall on dry grass.
Yes.
So don't do it.
Yeah. Contextually, right now, our province is on fire yes. again.
Uh-huh.
So that's why the...
it's not
you know,
great.
Doesn't
not
even
great.
Matter. Don't even have to say what year it is, because it's every year
it's
now.
Every
so
year.
It's
every
oh, no, okay. So just for the record, this episode, we are talking about the first... two perspectives in the prologue.
Yeah, that's right. Because this is a really long one.
Yeah, it's like 100 pages.
Right. So I finished it now.
The prologue?
I did. I finished the prologue just to put it out there for everybody.
All right.
I'm really excited about this book.
Awesome.
People were wondering if Crossroads of Twilight, I was going to rage quit or be so disappointed that I don't want to start the next book. But no, quite the opposite.
Yeah.
I am revved up and ready to go, and I'm ready for something to happen. And I have to tell you, the opening.
Were you impressed?
To this book,
it was good, right?
It did it.
Oh,
it,
man.
It
yeah.
really, really, really did it.
Yeah.
I was so excited. I was like, this better be what I think is happening. It better be what I want to happen. And then
love it.
It happens.
Love it.
So
I've said it before. I'll say it again. Knife of Dreams is like one of my favorite books, if not like top three. It's right up there.
Right.
So good. So I am very excited to talk about this book. So for the breakdown, since we're doing the prologue in three parts, we're going to do two perspectives today.
Yes.
The next episode is going to be three perspectives.
Right.
And then we're doing the last two perspectives.
Okay.
So anyone following along in that sense, like, that's what we're doing.
Okay. And for me, it was really exciting to be able to read, like, 100 pages.
Oh, yeah. That's tons.
I've been able to do so much, except now I've hooped myself.
Yeah.
Because... for the next three episodes, I can't read.
Can't do anything.
after, until we're done.
Yeah.
so we're done this episode, but then I can't read anymore.
That's right.
I'll probably just end up rereading.
You could reread the prologue,
the prologue.
Yeah,
several times.
Study. Yeah. Study. It's good. That's what we're doing here.
okay, but we got some housekeeping.
Yeah.
Because first, I want to say hello and welcome to anybody who's tuning in and joining us for the first time.
Yeah.
Maybe they also
that's
love
crazy if you're
Knife
here.
Of Dreams, like you love Knife of Dreams.
Oh my goodness. I can't. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
You're here. If you're doing that, good luck.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But hello anyway.
Mm-hmm. Now, importantly, we have to talk quickly about New Spring.
Right.
And I say quickly because we're not actually going to talk about New Spring right now. No. So we read New Spring out of publication order way back after book five.
Yeah, because the show was coming out and I didn't want New Spring to be spoiled
just
for
in
me
case.
Because of the show somehow.
Yeah, we didn't know what to expect. Yeah. But anyways, New Spring was published after Crossroads of Twilight. So now that we're going into Knife of Dreams, anything that was covered in New Spring is going to be fair game for conversation.
Okay.
So if you haven't read New Spring, you can go do that now. If you don't want to read it, you can listen to our episode. We actually break down New Spring in like seven episodes pretty quickly and pretty well.
Yeah, we did. It's pretty short.
It's pretty short. Get it done if you want to do it that way. But for the record, anything that was covered in New Spring may be talked about going forward.
Fair.
Yeah. It's publication order and that's what we always talked about.
That is true. And if you want to read New Spring at the end as a nice little dessert after, I really, really don't think we're going to be spoiling any major plot points.
Yeah, I really don't
in
think
New Spring at all.
I don't think
and
so either.
I will feel terrible if I don't at least say, ding, ding, New Spring alert or something like that.
We can try.
I'm going to try.
We can try.
I'm going to.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel good about the idea of potentially spoiling something for somebody who doesn't want it.
I get it. I get it. But publication order, go read it. Or go listen, get it done.
Also,
that's my warning.
Also, I understand why Crossroads and then New Spring.
Yeah.
Like the way that that was all published was.
It was tough because after Crossroads, instead of getting Knife of Dreams immediately after Crossroads, we got New Spring. And then it's like, I have to wait
even
longer.
It was years.
It was 2 years between Crossroads and Knife of Dreams. So
that's years.
That is years. Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. I get what you're saying. For us, very quick though. Hey?
Yes, for us.
You didn't have to wait.
I jumped right in.
Super cool.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now, are we ready to like start book 11?
Yeah. Well, are you going to give us a fun fact?
Well, yeah, I am, but that's starting.
Okay.
So, first off, as everyone should know, this is the last Robert Jordan book.
Right.
That he wrote individually.
That's right.
There's going to be lots we can talk about after this, but this is the last one, so get ready. It's a good one, but I just want to cover a couple of basic stats for the fun fact for today, so you know what we're looking at for Knife of Dreams.
Okay.
And we got to say Knife of Dreams a bunch of times to, like, get it into our vocabulary.
Sure.
Because switching to the next book is always difficult.
Oh, yeah.
So, this book contains a prologue, 37 chapters, and an epilogue.
Okay.
It's not the shortest, not the longest. It's very middle of the road for,
just
like, everything.
Just completely average.
Yeah, but I did find one interesting thing. So, from what I could find, the word count is about 267,000 words. But on some sites, there seems to be, like, a discrepancy with some of the claims of it being closer to 300,000 words. But I'm pretty sure it's closer to 267,000.
Okay.
So, there we go. There might be 30,000 words
okay.
missing somewhere. I don't really know.
That's the fun fact?
That's it.
That's
all I got for
you. That's not that
fun. No. Well, no.
You know, some people will think that's fun.
There's not a lot of we can pull out of that. And it's not, but that's the thing. It's not the shortest. It's not the longest. It's not the least chapters. It's not the most chapters. It's very, like, just middle of the road for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
That's all you get.
Okay. And now, I do want to talk to you about the cover of this book.
No, you don't get to do that.
Why?
We're going to do that on the third episode. So, the last section of the prologue, we're going to talk about... Don't even look at it for now. Don't look at it.
I want to
We'll talk about the cover art on the third prologue part. We can't.
You're
we,
so mean.
We can't talk
me
about
wait.
It now.
I know,
you have
but
to
I
wait.
Want to.
You have to wait.
I want...
It's fine. The fun fact was good enough. Let's move on.
Okay. Well, now I don't have anything to talk about
no,
except
fine.
The prologue.
Let's talk about the book. Let's get into here.
Fine.
Let's do
I
this.
I can talk about why I think it's called Knife of Dreams.
Well, there's the little intro passage, so maybe...
Okay, read it.
Okay.
Because I for sure read it maybe... I read it once.
Yeah.
I don't remember it now.
So
I didn't write it down or anything.
The little intro passage, it says, "The sweetness of victory and the bitterness of defeat are alike a knife of dreams."
Oh.
So here's the thing. This is a quote from Fog and Steel, which is a book that was written by Madoc Kolmogorin. Now, we actually have heard of Kolmogorin, and it's important and relevant because way back in Lord of Chaos Chapter 5, Matt Coffin quotes some battle tactics to Talmanis and the band, and Talmanis asks who Kolmogorin is, because mm-hmm. Matt is quoting the battle tactics of this guy.
Right.
And Matt answers that he was a general from a long time ago and that he's read his book. And then he thinks about how his memories of reading the book a few times are where he's actually getting this information. But this is clearly a passage.
Yeah, we're all very skeptical that Matt reads books.
Yeah, and this is a passage from a book from the guy. And then Matt also remembers meeting this general guy, Comadrin, after losing a battle to him about 600 years before Archer Hawkwing was around.
How about that?
Yeah, so this guy, it's a guy, and this might be the book.
Okay.
So, okay, go. What
yeah,
is it,
I don't
what
really
does it
care
mean?
About that at all. I was going to just say that maybe I get a really nice knife and I say, wow, this is the knife of my dreams.
No, yeah, okay.
You know?
Is it like a metaphorical knife though, maybe?
I'm sure. I'm sure there's nothing straightforward about anything, yeah. About anything in this book.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, you know, victory and defeat, similar. There's different
it's
ways you can interpret
metaphorical.
It.
Metaphorical.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's about as far
that's
as...
That's not a real knife.
No, it's about as much as we
although,
can do.
Although, remember when Crown of Swords was a real crown with little swords on it?
Yeah, that's true too. There's also like the metaphorical Path of Daggers.
Is it metaphorical or is it real?
Well...
There is a path.
There was the whole Shanshan. Yeah, it's like, oh, climb the heights, right?
Yeah.
Climbing the heights is like...
And did you know that they went on a great hunt?
They did.
And there is a person called the Dragon Reborn.
There is an Eye of the World, so maybe it's not
and
all
the
metaphorical.
Shadow did rise.
So there's a knife having to do with dreams.
No.
Okay.
No.
A dream knife.
Nah, this reminds me kind of like Fires of Heaven. Like it's one of those.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of floofy ones.
Sure.
Okay, that's all I got.
Okay.
Let's get into it. So, our chapter symbol is our classic prologue symbol, the wheel and snake.
It has to be.
Now, this is pretty funny, because when I started reading this, I thought we were with Gawain.
Oh my god.
Okay. I read Galad.
Okay.
I read that, and my brain translated it to the character of Gawain because I get them mixed up and we haven't heard from Galad since like what Fires of Heaven?
Okay, so
no, well, we heard of him
in Crossroads of Twilight
when Morghaz was captured.
No.
Oh no, that was before that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the last time we actually saw physically Galad was Fires of Heaven.
Okay, that's what I just said.
But that was back when he was
Circus.
Helping. Yeah, Nynaeve.
Circus Escape.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, okay.
I'm aware.
Yeah.
I remember Fires of Heaven, like, yeah. Nobody's business.
It's just we've heard of what Galad had been up to, like, literally every book from different people's perspectives. We saw his evolution from, like, his mother, Morghaz,
yep.
Who really wanted to meet with him.
But then was like, no.
Couldn't, yeah. Right? We saw him from Pedro Niles' perspective, thinking, oh, that Galad.
He's popular.
No, that was Valda.
Oh, that's Valda.
Yeah.
Who thinks
so Pedro Niles was like, oh, this guy's coming up and he's good.
Mm.
Right? But Valda is the one who was thinking, oh, he used to be good, but now he's too popular.
Oh.
And everyone knows that good officers are, I guess, mean to everyone all the time.
Not
but
popular,
it's really funny.
Yeah.
But Valda, for context of this perspective, Valda is the guy who initially gave Galad the White Cloak book back in TSR, who basically converted Galad into a White Cloak.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting dynamic for the relationship.
Well, I think that the whole he's getting too popular is because that's threatening.
Possibly.
Not because, oh, good officers are assholes. More like...
Can we take a little both columns for that one?
It could be both, but I think that Aemon Valda would then see him being, oh, that guy's a good officer who's going to, like, usurp me.
Okay.
And my role because he's so much more popular than, like, I am.
Yeah, I like that. I like
maybe,
it.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get into it then, because this is Galad, not Gawain.
Yep, good to know the difference.
Which matters.
It does. You're like, whoa, what? Gawain's a White Cloak
no,
too?
No. It didn't go that
think?
Long. It wasn't like...
right to the end, right up until 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, no. It was like the first couple sentences, and then I went, oh, right.
Yeah.
That's different.
What should happen is we should write out his full name. Do you remember his full name?
Galadadrid.
Galadadrid. Then
yes.
You could never... Galadadrid Damadrid.
That's the worst name. Okay. Now, we are going to enter with Galad, and he is riding down some road with some of his white cloak buddies, and we get that it's a pretty somber morning trip, and he's not in the best mood, and he's sort of set out to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an easy thing, but it's a thing he's gonna do.
Yeah, because he has to, because Galad's the guy who always does what's right no matter what.
Which, I have to tell you, so good. In this,
so good.
This is so good.
Elaine, I've been trying to tell you from the beginning, Elaine's got her half-brother wrong. Like, come on, you're
I think she does.
She's literally still got the mentality of being the little, like, girl who was tattled on probably all the time. And I get that.
Oh, yeah.
I understand
that. That's really annoying.
But it's not however, like, he's not a bad person.
Yeah. Like, because she hates him.
She hates him. She hates him.
Hate that guy. He's not even my brother.
Yeah, it's like, oh, the worst. It's like, it's just because he tattles a lot, or...
Probably, yeah.
Even Gawain was trying to defend Galad, being like, he's literally saved my life, and he probably shouldn't have if he wanted to, like, become...
Right, but then we have Min's viewing of him, that he will always do what's right no matter what.
Yeah.
Even if that... puts people that he cares about into danger.
Yeah.
But...
I mean, he's literally doing that here. He's putting people he cares about into danger. And putting himself into danger.
No, himself. He's not putting anyone he cares about into danger here.
I mean, debate if you... Nope. If you're going to argue that he doesn't care at all about, like, Trom or Byr or Bornhold.
I am going to argue that.
Okay. All right. Fine.
I am going to argue that. Because that is clearly not what I meant.
Maybe. I don't know.
No! No. Okay, let's get into it, though.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
After a bunch of exposition about the countryside, we finally get in sight of the destination, which is some manor house that the Seanchan gave to Aemon Valda, blah, blah, blah. We get a huge backstory.
But it's important. It's not recap. This is new. This is new. Let me explain real quick.
It feels like a little bit of... Because I couldn't remember. So the last time we saw Aemon Valda was in the prologue
Of Crossroads
of Twilight. And the white cloaks were white cloaking around.
They were.
And I didn't really take very much note or stock in what they were actually doing.
Okay, so here we go. So what had happened... what had happened was... before, the Seanchan had invaded Amadicia. And then... the White Cloaks got decimated, basically, but Valda and Asunawa snuck out about 9,000 Children of the Light. And then they were doing a bunch of sneaking around of, like, surviving in the woods, basically, not doing a heck of a lot, but they were planning something back last book. And they were planning to do whatever they have to do to destroy the witches.
Okay.
And then
now, did we see them at all... after the prologue?
No,
I feel
not
like
really.
Maybe we might have heard about them or something.
Not really, though.
Okay.
Not really. So, what it's clear in this perspective is that Valda and Asunawa made a deal with the Seanchan to help destroy the witches or whatever.
Right.
And they've, like, been given some land, maybe.
Okay.
There's some sort of peace treaty. But we get from Galad later on that, like, all the White Cloaks who were defending Amador when it got conquered, they're all still, like, captive and in chains and working.
Oh yeah.
And
like they, laborers.
And these White Cloaks here that Asunawa and Valda have, they're, like, free, but they're under the Seanchan control.
Okay.
But, like, they're not really free.
Okay.
But they're sorta, but not really.
Okay. All right. So now Galad thinks about how he's not wearing any of his armor this morning, because if this morning goes as he hopes, then he'd have to remove his armor anyway.
Yeah, for the fight.
And that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
So then we find out who came along with him, and it's some guy named Trom, and I really don't think that we know this guy.
Yeah, we know this guy. Come on. Oh my goodness. This is so good.
Because I was going to say, okay, I know Dane Bornhold. I know Child Byr.
Yeah, we know those guys.
We know these guys.
We know Trom, though. We heard about him a couple of times, and it gets really funny. So
Trom is a dumb name. Can I just say that? What a stupid...
Yeah.
I'm sorry if anyone has the name.
It's like Torm, but different.
I'm sorry if somebody has the name Trom. It's just, it feels like it's a made-up name.
Well, it's backwards, and it's family. Mort. Anyways, okay, not the point. We know Trom. We know Trom because he was in Fires of Heaven when Galad was with Elaine and Nynaeve, and they were in Cienda trying to figure out how to escape.
Sorry, I have to interrupt you.
Yeah.
My son is also named Trom. I was, like, waiting for the comment. My name is Trom.
Yeah, that's exactly
sorry.
What it's going to be.
Sorry, Trom.
But it gets better. It gets better. So Trom is also the guy who literally caught Pater and his buddies doing the Dark Friend stuff,
oh,
which got
no
them executed.
Way. Yeah. Go Trom.
He's
the
guy who,
like, white cloak.
He's the guy who kicked down the door.
Real dark friends. You
got real dark friends. They did it, man. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, we got to trust this guy. We got to trust that Peter and his dumb friends.
We
got to
trust Trom's instincts.
Yeah, they were doing actual dark friend stuff. And then we find out that he got promoted to Lord Captain. We find that out in this chapter. He got promoted to a Lord Captain after the Battle of Jeramel. And we heard that that is what Valda has been trying to call Aelron's disaster. So basically what happened was, after the Shanshan invaded, King Aelron, who doesn't really have a lot of power, he took all the soldiers and went to go and try and fight the Shanshan, and they got just the
decimated.
Floor got wiped out. Yeah, so they're all dead, and the King Aelron is dead too. So Valda's trying to rebrand the Battle of Jeramel to Aelron's disaster.
Okay.
And Trom got a promotion because a bunch of Lord Captains died in that fight.
Okay.
So he's like a new Lord Captain.
Okay. So not going great for Amadeusia.
Or the White Cloaks. It's all bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. But I do have to say, a little bit of a redemption story here for my guys, Byer and Dane.
I was going to say Byer maybe a little bit more than Dane.
Both.
But both. I can see both.
These are guys we don't like at all.
Yeah.
Every book we've ever seen them in, they're literally the worst people. And we're like, ugh, get off of my page because you're terrible.
Byer's the one who, like, kidnapped Egwene and there he's going to let them go, but probably murder them.
I think Byer was the one that we had the discussion about the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath.
That would make sense, too.
Because he didn't like doing the torturing.
Yeah.
But he still didn't bat an eye at doing it. Like, it didn't, you know, faze him.
They were both also...
That was, like, book one.
Yeah. I mean, they were also in The Shadow Rising with the Two Rivers thing.
Yes.
When Perrin was saying, oh, if you guys help defend the Two Rivers,
and
I'll turn myself in.
Didn't.
And it didn't help. And then he was like, I'm not going to turn myself
in
anymore.
But it was Dane who was all messed up with Fane.
Yeah.
Right? Because that rhymed for too long.
Dane and Fane,
and Fane were together, and then there was, like, the Merdral there.
Yeah.
And that was, like, in Terran Ferry or something.
Yeah.
So
Dane Bornhold is also, like, the crazy psycho guy who wants to kill Perrin. He's like, oh, watch the world burn if it means I can kill you. He's really adamant about it.
But he was also drunk half the time,
and
so...
He's still hung over at least here.
He's hung over here.
He's not doing great.
No, but at least we have a bit of redemption.
His dad died in book two, and it was Perrin's fault.
Yeah, I know.
Of course.
I know that.
Okay.
Well, I wouldn't... Okay.
Anyway, so
Dane thinks it's principal.
That's the new... That's the squad.
This is the squad.
Yeah. Galad, Trom, Bornhold, Byer.
Okay.
We're doing this.
Sure. But I do have to thank Dane.
Yeah.
For drinking.
Yeah. Okay.
Because he spilled some beans.
Oh, I get it.
It was Dane who was drinking and spreading rumors about little pieces of stuff he heard... That got to Galad.
There you go.
Galad wouldn't know if it weren't for Dane's drinking brandy. So thanks. Thanks, Dane.
Yeah. Full circle. It all comes around.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've always said, let that guy have a drink. I've never said that.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting, too, because, like, we know all the terrible things these guys have done. Like, the Byer with the torture.
Oh, yeah.
But the moral code is that abusing women is a no-go. And it's like, I can support that.
Yeah.
But, like, why is that the line when you guys have abused, but I guess if you think that they're dark friends, then it doesn't really
count. You can abuse women if they're dark friends.
I just answered
because
my own question.
Because then it's not abuse.
Yeah.
Then it's justice.
Right. Makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the line.
And to be fair, they really only beat up Perrin real bad. Like, I don't think they tortured Egwene very much.
Well, they thought she was an Aes Sedai.
Yeah.
Or a witch, so...
Yeah, okay.
Or a dark friend.
Yeah.
So as long as you claim someone a dark friend, you can...
You're good.
Torture them.
You're good.
And it's fine.
Love it. Easy rules to follow.
Yeah.
I like it.
Now, nobody's calling Morgaze a dark friend, so
even though,
this is the line.
Even though she trained in the tower, like, hold up.
Okay, right. But now we're spoiling the mic drop moment.
Okay,
so
let's get it. Yeah, okay.
We get this whole scene where Galad is like, you can leave. Don't come with me. And they're like... Suck it. We're coming with you.
We're going to do it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some things are just... I've had to do terrible things to serve the light, but some things are just too terrible. They can't be stood for.
Uh-huh.
It's like, okay, I guess
yeah, I think that they really just don't like Valda and they're hoping Galad kills him.
Well, that... Maybe that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's putting a lot of trust in Galad to do... For everything to go right. Like, there's a lot of places where this could have gone very wrong.
Can I tell you that at no point in this entire perspective did I think things were going to go wrong.
Oh, really?
Oh, no.
Okay.
But also, I thought things weren't going to go wrong for Egwene.
Yeah, that's true.
At the end of the last books. And that's why I was so angry. Because
I mean, we got time still. We got time for this to go wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, except, you know, usually I have a bit of a gut check.
Yeah.
My gut check this whole time. Although, okay, we'll talk about it when we get there.
Let's get further into this.
Yeah.
Let's get to the manor.
I know. There's lots to talk about. This is exciting. Okay, so when they get up to the house, Asunawa is here, surrounded by a few of his questioner lackeys, and Galad is only focused on Valda, who's in the courtyard. And Valda is like, hey, Trom, why are you here? Aren't you supposed to be doing some job that other people are also doing?
So all the Lord Captains or Lord's Captain are meeting with the Shanshan right now, and that's where he's supposed to be. And it's just important to note that Galad is only an officer, so Trom is technically higher ranking than Galad right now. So that's why Galad's kind of being ignored.
Okay, but Trom is like, listen, there's an urgent matter because a child under my command is charging another of the children with abusing a female relative of his. And right away I was like, no.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, we're doing
and
this.
And I was like, this has to be what I think it is. I was like, how? How though? How could it possibly...
Well,
you know
easy,
what I mean?
Easy peasy. When a terrible military organization has shitty old school rules of how to, I don't know, distribute justice by a one-on-one combat.
No. What I was saying, like how, because right away I was like, a female relative, like, could this be Morghese? Because at first I don't really actually know what's even going
on.
Okay,
that's fair. That's
and then
fair.
I was like, ooh, how would Galad even know?
Yeah.
Like, this is a thing. So, yeah. But anyway... Trom goes on and is like, we're going to claim a trial beneath the light, which you must grant or deny.
Yeah, so they actually do this, like, super sneaky, where they bring up the fact that somebody wants to charge somebody with
this. Yeah, but doesn't tell them who.
They don't tell who or what or anything, so it's clearly, like, a play to trick Valda into agreeing to the situation.
Because he wants to, like, see a fight or whatever.
Well, yeah, exactly. And he doesn't necessarily know that's going to be him who's being charged, because that's crazy. Uh-huh. Oh, man, it's such a good play.
Yeah.
So Trom is in on it, too, which is pretty cool, getting your superiors to support you like that.
Yeah, and Asunawa... is like, well, that's weird. We're not going to do this because no one's done that in 400 years.
It's an old rule.
And we don't want the Shanshan to know that anyone in the Children of the Light could do anything like that. So we're just going to keep this quiet.
Let me sweep it under the rug.
Yeah.
Real quick. I'll handle it personally.
Right.
Don't worry.
And this actually works in Galad's favor because Valda and Asunawa are like super butting heads.
Oh, they hate each other.
Like just hate
Terrible.
Each other. And so because Asunawa said the reverse psychology thing.
Mm-hmm. It works.
Valda is like.
Bites so hard.
Shut it, Asunawa. We're gonna do this because I like the old ways.
Yeah, hey, we should bring up more of those old dusty rules from way back in the day.
Bring them back.
Let's do it. Let's do the trial beneath the light. Oh, it's so good.
Okay, so now it's Galad's turn.
Well, first there's like a whole bunch of formal
saying
the trial is on. And then this is where we actually learn that it's a one-on-one sword duel. And
to the death.
To the death. But it's also, he declares that if anyone tries to refuse this fight, then it's an acknowledgement of guilt and you have to be hanged on the spot.
Ooh, okay.
So basically, if Valda tries to worm his way out of it after declaring this, then his own guys are supposed to like step in and arrest him and hang him on the spot.
Yeah.
So,
Either way, great news.
It's pretty great.
Yeah. Because I really did think, I was like, oh yeah, Aemon Valda doesn't have a quarterstaff. That's the only way Galad is beat.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah, you like that callback?
That's a good one. Okay. I like it.
Now, this is interesting because Valda goes, all right, go ahead. Accuse your man.
Tell your guy.
Tell your guy
tell,
to
tell
do
the,
it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you just did.
Boom.
And so then Galad is like, hey, Valda, I call you because you assaulted Morghese Trakand and you also murdered her.
And then I love the thought process in his head.
He's like, well, technically no one has confirmed that she's dead.
But close enough.
Yes. And then this is when we get the whole backstory that Dane let it slip.
Yeah.
And then Byar confirmed it. Because I guess he was around there?
Yeah, Byar was like meeting with Pedra Nile, and that was back when Pedra Nile had Morghese, and it's pretty clear that she was being held against her will.
Right.
So it's like a whole bunch of splashes. Because also, Morghese was trying to ask like, to see Galad.
Yes.
But Niall was saying no, because he knew that that was going to be a bad situation for Galad and for the White Cloaks. Like, he didn't want to open up that can of worms. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. But anyway, so I was like, right away, if Morghaz doesn't get justice here, like, Galad can't possibly lose right now, because that would mean that we don't get justice for Morghaz.
And that can't happen?
Can't. I would be so angry.
You don't want that to happen.
No, not no, that no. That can't happen for me personally.
Okay.
I would be personally offended.
We wouldn't want
by
that.
This book in the very first perspective of the very first chapter prologue.
Yeah.
It just couldn't happen. It couldn't.
True.
I was going to be so upset.
Well, you know, if...
Because it's already been so bad. Morghaz has already had it so bad.
I was just going to say, but if Galad died, then just like Gawain could come and get the vengeance after the fact, right?
Yeah,
like,
right. No way.
There we go. Easy peasy.
Yeah,
that's,
right.
That's how it works.
No. Anyway, so I knew that this was going to be like, yes, this was like a fist pump moment. I was so pumped. Okay, well, it is time to take a quick break, so let's go do that and come right back.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, but now, at this point, Asunawa tries to insert himself, and he's like, this is crazy.
Right, this is the shock.
Clearly, like, this is a Dark Friend plot. Take Galad, whatever. Like, no way, we're not doing this.
Well, keep in mind, because Valda is literally, like, the highest rank. He's the Lord Captain Commander. He's top dog.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Oh, also, whoever dies in this fight never is to be talked of ever again.
Oh, yeah. Scratch from the records and all
and
that good stuff.
Everyone has to forget this his accomplishments.
This is a terrible system for justice and judgment. Like, it's horrible.
It. I think
awful.
It's funny.
It's just literally the strongest, the best swordsman can do whatever if you just...
No, Brett. No. You're not understanding.
The light.
It's the light. The light
is going to guide
it.
My sword.
Exactly. Whoever is guilty... The light will kill them.
Something, something about, you know, witches, if
and
they're innocent,
and I have to tell you, the light won here.
It
did it. He was guilty.
Okay, yeah, okay.
He's a terrible, terrible dude, and he deserved to die.
Well, Asunawa was also, like, torturing Morghaz, so, like, where is he at?
Sure. Gone. Yes, that's true, too.
Okay.
But,
okay.
Like,
half
I
justice.
Feel like the sexual abuse is, like, it's all bad.
How are we going to rank the badness
of
that?
I don't want to rank it. I don't want to rank it. I'm just happy to see at least one
of
them dead.
Let's do this, though. Okay. Because, again, you're spoiling what happens in, like, the next page or two.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. But anyway, Asunawa clearly doesn't have a say. This is going to happen. And he starts taunting Galad for making the challenge, and then he accepts the duel.
Yeah. So we're going to do this. Now we got to get ready, and this is the whole armor thing.
You got to take your armor off.
Take your armor off, because you just use your sword, and that's why Galad was... riding in without armor,
because
you have to take it off, and if it went bad, and he did, like, armor wouldn't help, because he would literally just be taken by all the Children of the Light here.
Right, and now is the time we are going to find out that Valda is actually a Blade Master.
Yeah.
And we get some backstory about how to become a Blade Master.
Can
we're
I,
11 books into the series,
can I just
and
say?
Only right now we're finding out exactly how that happens?
Yeah, so here's the thing. It's actually really funny because we've met Blade Masters all over the place.
Yeah, we have.
Tam.
Yes.
Rand.
Yes.
Turak.
Yes.
We've got Toram Raiten.
Okay. Well.
Lan.
Well, okay. Hold on. Rand.
No.
Although now he is. Now he is. But.
No. Let me do this.
Okay.
Because it's really funny because it is 11 books in. This is the first time in the entire series where we actually learn the qualifications for becoming a Blade Master.
And getting your Harren marked
getting
blade.
A Harren marked sword. Like, that's a huge deal, and it's actually one of the biggest things that people are really bad at talking to you about.
Who? What people?
People have mentioned something somewhere. It's like, oh, Rand is a Blade Master, etc., etc., etc.
Oh, okay.
And talking about, like, when he actually earns his Blade Master sword.
Oh, yeah.
So here's the thing. These are the qualifications. It comes
talking
a little
to
bit
me?
Late.
People talk to me about it?
It's been, like, comments sometimes.
Oh,
just, like,
good
off
thing
references.
I have no clue.
You haven't paid attention.
Yeah, no,
I
not at all.
Yeah, but that's okay. But here's the thing. There are basically two schools of thought. There's two ways to become a Blade Master. One is you can kill someone in fair combat and earn the blade.
Right.
If they're a Blade Master and you square off one-on-one, whatever it's fair, whatever is determined as fair, and you beat them, you get to take essentially their sword and their title as Blade Master. And the second way is that you have to have 5 Blade Masters sit in judgment of your skills and vote unanimously to grant you the title, and the vote always has to be unanimous.
And it's 5 Blade Masters?
5 Blade Masters.
Okay.
So that's like a crazy qualification too. Mm-hmm. So the funny thing is when you look at people like Tam, so Tam is a blade master. He has
a Heron Mark
blade.
Yeah.
So he had to do one of those two things. We don't actually know how he earned it.
No.
But Rand asked him a question in Eye of the World, like, how did you get that sword? And he has a little comment about the cost being too high.
Right.
Which is an interesting thing knowing now that he either killed a blade master for it,
yeah,
or he squared off and earned the title.
Right.
But technically, Rand became a blade master
when he killed Turak.
When he killed Turak,
yeah,
who was a blade master.
That's right.
So that is when he officially
got it.
Became.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool.
Okay.
But it's also really funny because like the biggest callback that I absolutely love is knowing how good you have to be a blade master. When Rand like falls over the wall in Camelin way back,
yes,
and then he meets Morghaz, and then they see his Heron Mark blade. There's like a dozen soldiers in the room who immediately back up, and Rand notes that they look like they're ready to die, trying to defeat Rand. And Rand doesn't understand what's happening. But like these guys are like, oh my god, this is a blade master, and he can probably literally kill all of us and kill the queen, and this is an assassination attempt or something.
Okay.
So there's just like a lot more context.
Or some of them want to fight Rand and win so they could be blade masters.
It's not a fair contest.
Oh.
12 on 1 wouldn't be a fair way to earn a...
No, but if one of them is like, I don't know, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
They're like eyeing him up, they're like, I'm going to get into a fight with this guy, so I can...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's like a lot of context for watching the evolution of like Rand with his sword, but
yeah,
it's pretty good. But this is the first time we learn how that all goes,
yeah,
down.
Yeah, because we always knew from the very beginning that the Heron on that blade is like a big deal.
So now we're going to get into the part where it's just basically Valda doing a whole lot of taunting.
Yep.
And the starting of the showboating.
Oh, yeah.
That
for
he
everybody.
Does. For, mm-hmm. Yeah, all that good stuff. So he taunts Galad about, hey, your sister wants to be an Aes Sedai, so clearly
that's where this rumor came from.
Yeah, we're going to send your head back to the Aes Sedai and show them what their scheming gets them. Ah.
So
a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and then Byr's going to come up to Galad and give him some tips on how to fight Valda.
Yeah.
And how Valda likes to fight.
Well, it's actually interesting, too, because apparently Valda is like a big showboater, so he strikes limbs.
Yeah.
So he tries to like bleed his target out and he plays with them because I guess like he wants his target to know that they're going to die and that he's the one. He's just
yeah.
a dick, right?
Yes. Oh,
and
yeah.
That's the basic premise. But yep. Galad, is, like all the way he was taught was you do it quick and clean and just get it done. Like,
yes.
Go for the kill.
Yeah,
don't
enjoy it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to get killed.
And don't make people suffer. And
well, yeah, and it's yeah. That's a way to get killed. If you drag it out longer, like something bad can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Ooh, Game of Thrones.
Right?
Showboating reference.
Don't do it.
Pedro Pascal.
Oh. Anyways.
Yeah.
Traumatized from that. But yeah, and then there's like a little back and forth with Valda still trying to like take control to be the judge of like, and he's telling people what to do.
Yep.
And then Trom jumps in. He's like, actually, you're a participant here, so you can't do that. So I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really just saying that if Galad did happen to lose here, then his buddies are all going to have like a bunch of high-powered enemies in the White Cloaks.
Oh,
now.
Yeah, for sure.
It would go bad for all four of them if
yep.
Galad comes out of this poorly.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's why Galad tried to give them the out.
Yeah.
And was like, you don't have to come with me to do this. And then they all did it anyway.
Friends don't let friends kill Lord Captain Commanders without being there to support them.
Good one.
There you go. Put
you
that
know,
on t-shirt.
That is the redemption, I think, for them.
Yeah.
All right. So Valdo's going to saunter over and Galad just like walks normally. And
it's
when,
more taunting.
Yeah, it is more taunting and so bad because
yeah.
Valda basically says a lot of really gross things and admits to doing the thing.
Yeah, to Morghaz. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, now I did have to look up a word.
Okay.
So Valda tells Galad that the last time he saw the wench,
yeah,
she was looking hale.
Oh.
H-A-L-E.
Okay.
And blah, 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 other gross things.
What is hail?
But I was like,
mean?
What is that?
Yeah.
Now, it's an adjective of a person, especially an elderly one, strong and healthy. So,
what?
Valda is saying to Galad that Morghaz looked strong and healthy the last time he saw her.
Okay, okay.
For an old person.
Gotcha. It's like a little bit of a...
Yeah.
Okay, okay. You know what? He's a good sword fighter. He might not be the best at, you know, insults. I don't know. Is that what he's going for?
No, that's what he's going for. He's like saying like, yeah, last time I saw her, like she wasn't dead.
Yeah. Okay. That
that's
makes sense.
Really what he's saying.
Because he accused him of murdering Morghaz.
Yeah.
So that's actually fair, because he didn't murder Morghese, but Vlad accused him, so.
Yeah, no, but then he admits to the other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it is important to note that this little second meeting where he's taunting him about Morghese,
yeah,
technically, this is supposed to be the last conversation they have where they can hopefully work this out with words so that one of the Children of the Light doesn't have to die today.
Oh.
This is supposed to be like a the last chance peace negotiation.
No, but Valda's using this to try to throw Galad off.
Yeah.
But instead, it almost like makes him angrier.
I mean, Galad knows the Flame and the Void, the oneness.
He does.
So, I mean, that's pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
That's what his mentors taught him.
Yeah.
But then we get a couple last words from the boys.
Yeah.
And then it's time to do this thing.
Time to fight.
Someone's got to die here.
Yeah. And then now I didn't write down every sword form that's listed here.
Okay.
I bet online somewhere every sword form is listed.
Sure.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
But they basically fight.
It's a good fight.
They fight. Fight, and then it's over.
Yeah. So I'm going to highlight a couple important pieces of information here.
Yeah.
So first off, this is the part where we actually get the stuff on the Blademaster thing. But with the actual fight, so spoiler warning, Galad wins.
Galad wins.
He kills Valda. So
yeah, no, he wins.
Galad goes into this fight being prepared to die. So he's like, hey, if I have to sheath the sword, we saw Rand do it.
Which is very sexual, by the way.
Yep.
That's why people say things like, ball on the sword.
Sure.
Yeah.
I prefer this way. This is better. Yep.
I don't, but that's just me.
So here's the thing. Valda going into this fight is a showboater, and Galad actually gets the first nick.
Yeah.
So he gets him a little bit. But then Valda cuts Galad a couple of times, and he's doing a bunch of the showboating, and he's waiting for Galad to wear down, because that's what Bayar was telling him, is like, that's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
So then Galad starts pretending.
Yeah, he's faking getting tired. Wearing down.
Exactly. And takes a few deliberate cuts, because he can't be on defense really fast, because he's waiting for like the perfect opportunity to go, I'm faster than you, and I gotcha. And then he waits and waits and waits. And then finally, he sells the I'm getting tired thing well enough that Valda bites on it. And he goes for the killing blow. And the Galad does a little fake out thing and alters his strike and then slashes Valda across the belly. And then Valda's insides become his outsides.
Ah, yes. Yeah, no. And he opens his mouth to speak, but only blood comes out.
Hooray!
Very graphic.
We love it.
And you know what? I did, actually.
It's a good death scene for someone who we hate.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I like it.
Justice for Morghese.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm good with it.
Cool.
I'm happy with this.
Unfortunately, so right before this fight, Galad told Bornhold to keep an eye out on Asunawa. And Bornhold was like, why? He can't interfere. That would be illegal.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, literally anything they want to do, they will do. It doesn't matter if it's in the law or not. Like, they're going to say whatever they have to do.
Yes, they will.
It's like crazy. So Dane doesn't get it. But then after the fight, Asunawa and his guys are gone.
They take off.
Dane didn't do a very good job of watching which way they go because he like gets it wrong.
He's like, no, I think they just
went back to camp, man.
Yeah.
It's like,
someone else was like, no. They went to that Shanchen meeting, right?
Yeah, to get like the Lord's Captains where they all are. So like they're probably going to be back with, I don't know, everybody.
Yeah.
So that's bad.
Well.
Do better, Dane.
You know, this is Valda's fault. I don't think Asunawa can actually hold Galad accountable here.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's the tricky part. So, okay, before all that, so Galad's aware that all the White Cloaks are like slapping their shoulders.
They're all like, woo, you did it.
Yeah. Because he literally just
won.
He won under the light in a very legal, law-abiding
one-on-one duel. And he also just became a Blademaster. Someone picks up the hair-marked sword and is like, this is yours now.
Yeah, so that also does technically happen.
Yeah.
And
what do you mean technically?
Okay, well, because you're kind of like jumping a little bit ahead to the
end
of the
perspective.
Oh,
that's just the part that is interesting to me. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's
fair. No. We could back up to the other stuff.
Yeah, we got to go through a couple things for like what the next steps are.
Right, okay.
Because, so,
Galad, I just want to talk about the fun stuff.
Yeah, Galad just killed the Lord Captain Commander of the Children of the Light,
mm-hmm.
Valda. Asunawa, the head of the Questioners, seems to be pissed. That's going to be bad. So, Trom tells Galad, like, hey, nobody here is going to let the Questioners come back and arrest you. But I'm going to write out a release of service for you, so you're no longer a White Cloak. You can get the hell out of here.
Go. And you can get far enough away.
Because they're not going to be able to find you if you start running now. Like, sorry, man. And Galad turns it down, and he says, no, I'm not leaving.
I actually thought it was a good idea. I thought he should go.
Yeah, but that wouldn't be the right thing to do because Galad says, hey, what about you guys? What about everybody else? What about all the captives,
I
the
Shanshan?
What about all the White Cloaks who don't want to side with the Shanshan?
Yeah.
What about all those guys? You can't, are you going to write releases for everybody?
Yep.
And it's like,
no.
Yeah, maybe. Like that.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Start a new faction. I don't know.
Do we actually even need White Cloaks? Everybody just go leave.
Yeah.
Go do something else. Go join another army somewhere.
There you go. Like, there's options here, people. But anyways, he doesn't. But Galad is thinking like, hey, Asinaba's going to find a way to accuse anybody who wants to. Doesn't really matter. So that's the predicament he's in right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Trom's like, okay, well, what's the plan then? Because you kind of started this thing. How are we going to end it? And Galad says, take the children and find someone, anyone who's willing to fight the Shanshan and ally with them.
Even if it's Aes Sedai.
Even if it's Aes Sedai. Because one of the guys is like, anybody? Because that could mean channelers. And it's like, yeah, man, even that. And there's a whole big conversation, which I actually think is really important, where Galad's like, you know what? If you want to show up to the last battle, Tarmon Gaiden, you're going to have to fight with the Aes Sedai. Like, that's how it's going to have to be.
And everyone's like,
yeah.
Yeah?
Little humming and hawing.
All right, even Byr.
Even Byr gets on board. He's like, hey, I get it, to fight the Raven, or to fight the Dark One.
Oh, I like this.
Yeah, to fight the Raven, you have to side with the Serpent.
Yes.
Serpent being Aes Sedai, but the Raven also might apply to the Shanshan.
Right.
Not just the Dark One.
Right. So, I like the make an alliance with the Serpent, specifically because the Aes Sedai have a Serpent Ring.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I like that.
Yeah, so that is what Galad's basic plan is take these White Cloaks that we have, who are, I guess, aligned with us, within this little inner White Cloak faction, and go find someone who we can fight with, someone better.
Right. And now, does this make Galad the new Lord Captain Commander?
That's the thing.
Because that's what it sounds like.
That's what Trom says. So he says, I guess what you want is, like, this is going to happen, my Lord Captain Commander. So that's what Trom, who's a Lord Captain, is saying to Galad. It's like, you killed him. You are now the Lord Captain Commander of the White Cloaks.
Mm.
And Galad says, that's a bad joke, man. Don't make that joke. That's a bad joke.
Oh.
So that's what I was saying, like, okay, well, like, maybe. Because, yeah, he is a Blade Master now, technically, because this is when the guy comes up and he's like, hey, this is your sword now, my Lord Captain Commander. And he's like, man, I really hope that people stop saying that by the time we get back to camp.
Okay.
So.
Because I was going to say, hot tip for anyone who wants a promotion.
Kill your... Wait, should we... Okay, don't say that. Should we...
Oh my gosh.
You know, sometimes.
Oh
sometimes,
my gosh, that's really funny.
I get
okay.
It, but okay.
All right,
anyways,
so...
So yeah, so allegedly and maybe, Galad might be the new Lord Captain Commander.
Well, it kind of just seems like, oh, I don't want to be a bloody lord situation.
It kind of feels that way.
And it's like, but you are, so... Just do it.
Yeah. Well, consider, you know? Consider how Valda became Lord Captain Commander.
Was it because Pedronile died?
Well, Omurna killed Pedronile.
Yeah.
And then Valda killed Omurna. And then Asinawa walked in and was like, what's going on here? And then Valda was like, you know, hey, you like being the High Questioner. I want to be Lord Captain Commander.
And they were like okay. Yeah.
So that's how you become Lord Captain Commander?
Well, no, doesn't there have to be a vote or something? There was like a whole explanation when that whole situation happened, I'm
sure.
Yeah,
I mean, like, again, allegedly, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, maybe we should get the other Lord Captains to vote on this? I don't know. That's the thing. Maybe.
Okay.
So, okay, the perspective ends with Galad turning to go back to his camp, and he's like, he's hoping that the foolishness ends, because, like,
being
I don't think...
Called
being
Lord...
called that.
Oh,
like, he doesn't,
I get
he doesn't
it.
Want that.
Okay.
He's like, hey, let's drop that. And then he's also thinking, I'm probably going to be put in chains or just beaten to death, but I still have to do the right thing. He's not going to run away. He's going to go back to camp.
This was the right thing to do.
Exactly.
And I agree. And I'm here for it.
Yeah. It's just where,
great.
Where do we go from here with Galad? And what is Asinawa going to do? Is he running off? Is he taking White Cloaks? Like, who's really on Galad's
side
here? So
tell you honestly?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I guess we're going to find out. Read and find out, right? That's what they say.
That's what they say, yeah.
Yet the problem is with the White Cloak stuff, I'm not 100% certain I even understand a lot of it. And so predicting what's happening next, not too good at that.
You said your radar for things going badly, like
ooh,
you didn't think
yeah,
anything
yeah,
bad
yeah.
was going to happen.
Yeah, my gut check.
Do you think that this is going to end with, like, Galad in charge of the White Cloaks?
Oh, it feels that way.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, maybe.
You know, I think that we've had this discussion before about the White Cloaks and about how their entire organization seems to have started from, like, a genuine place of really just wanting to live in the light and avoid the shadow and, yeah, all of that. And it feels like it's evolved to this, like, wild thing.
Yeah, they lost their purpose all
the
way.
They lost sight. They are just this terrible army. They are majority terrible people.
Yeah.
It's just not great.
Okay.
But maybe we can return to that where we don't think all channelers are dark friends.
Yeah.
Just because the One Power, like, the One Power is not inherently evil.
Galad would be a good, he's got family.
Yeah.
Who are channelers.
Well, and he's already turning a bunch of the White Cloaks on his side who are like, even Byr.
Yeah.
Who's like, yeah, I'm no fan of them, but you make sense. We need to fight the Seanchan. We need them out of here.
He's got some good connections.
He does have great connections. Although Elaine needs to be a little more mature.
Yeah.
And also she needs to be the queen.
He's got a pretty important half-brother.
Is that Rand?
It's Rand.
Yeah.
You know.
But he doesn't know that.
Yeah.
He doesn't know he has that connection.
Yeah.
We know it, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're getting there. Give it time, maybe, you know.
All right.
A little history lesson here or there.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, anyway.
Good segue. Okay.
Okay. That's the end of this perspective. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll jump into the final one that we're talking about for this episode.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're back with a perspective change.
Yeah.
To... another guy that we last saw in a prologue.
Rodel Iteralda, or Iteralda, or whatever you want to say.
Yeah, that's the guy.
One of the great captains. This is the Little Wolf.
Ooh.
But don't tell him that to his face.
Right.
He's the wolf.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
So we last saw him in Crossroads of Twilight,
mm-hmm.
prologue,
yeah.
where he was planning his plan.
He's planning his plan, and now he's executing said plan.
There it is.
Seems to be going okay.
Yeah. From what I... understand.
it's not that complicated. Like, it's written a little bit crazy, but,
it's,
you know.
It's crazy. It feels crazy because there are things that he's saying out loud.
Yeah.
But he's not actually talking to people, think, maybe.
He's, okay, so there's a plan. He's a great captain, so everything is timed to the moment.
Yeah.
And he's calling out the shots for what should be happening, and more or less, those things are happening exactly when he's expecting them to happen.
I see.
That's basically what's happening. And keeping in mind, he's not from where we are right now.
Okay.
We are in Terrabon, so we get a little segment where it's like, hey, we're halfway between El Mora and the Amadisian border. And on the map, that's basically like the bottom left of the map. We're in Terrabon. He, the little wolf, Iteralda, is not from Terrabon.
No, he's from Eridomen.
And his plan was to bring all the Terrabonners who are up in his country, bring them back down to their own country and help them fight the Seanchan off.
And then let them stay there.
And then he wants to keep the Terrabonners in Terrabon. He wants to ride on back up to Eridomen and spring a trap, or maybe have a bunch of other traps ready for the Seanchan if they do chase him.
Right.
But if and he doesn't get chased,
the Terrabonners
then,
in Terrabon.
As long as the Terrabonners stay where they belong in their own country.
Get out.
Then it's fine.
Right. And okay. Also... maybe hurt the Seanchan a little bit.
Yeah, drive the Seanchan back. That, totally. Want to do that too. But like mostly... I just want the Terrabonners back in Terrabon.
Okay, so he has 100 Domani with him, which is different than Demani.
Yeah, the Domani are the from Eridomen people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And Demane.
Demani.
Demani, yeah. Domani. Mm-hmm. Demani, Demani.
You get it.
You know, they're spelled very different.
Yeah, so he's got 100 of...
Eridomen people.
Yeah, his own guys with him, and he wishes there was like 5 times as many.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have it. But what he does have is a bunch of Terrabonners in and around. So there's like Iteralda over here, and then on the other side, like way to the west, there's a group of Terrabonners who are being led by this crazy Dragonsworn guy.
Mm.
And that's the action that he's watching the majority of this chapter.
Litzel or something? What's...
Yeah, his name is Torne... Lana Siet.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he makes an appearance in this chapter, and then apparently he runs off.
Yeah, goodbye.
See you later, man.
See ya.
Yeah. John. John. John the Dragonsworn.
John Guy.
John Guy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Easier to say.
Mm-hmm.
Not Torne.
Lata Siete.
Yeah.
There's a lot of vowels in there.
Yeah. It's like, is he French? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Seems that way. But here we are going to get some exposition of Iteralda looking out at the layout of the village and the area and how the Shanshan forces around it aren't laid out that effectively.
Yeah, he's like criticizing
it.
Oh,
yeah. He's like, oh, look at those fire hazards over there.
Terrible setup. He's a great captain. He's look at that. Terrible. Yeah.
Terrible.
But I would have done it much
differently. He does admire the Shanshan supply lines.
Yeah. Well, like their ability to supply their troops where they need it, when they need it, because in war, two things win battles, information and supply lines. Those are the two things you need.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's why he's going to hit some of the supply stores.
Exactly. And that's why the Shanshan are crazy effective, because they've got great information and they've got great supply lines.
Yeah. And also, they're very adaptable.
Yeah.
They're not like...
They change their strategy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, there's a couple, but like those are the two big ones for like effective armying.
Right. Now, what's interesting is that down in this village, there are only actually about 100 Shanshan.
Yeah.
And there's about 300 Terrabonners with Shanshan stripey colors.
Yeah, because that's the Shanshan strategy, is you just recruit the people from there, and then they're your soldiers now, so.
That's right.
Yeah.
And now another big group of Shanshan had showed up that night. Now, are we in the night or are we in daytime? Like, I have no idea.
So right now, it's the morning time. It's daytime.
Okay.
Right? And yesterday, originally there was only like 100 soldiers, but then like 300 soldiers showed up, and then another 300 showed up. So now there's maybe around 600-700 soldiers or so.
Okay.
Plus there's one
Damani
Suldam pair, whatever, is in this town. So he thinks like, okay, I've had to change my strategy a couple of times, and I also can't just delay until these people leave, because
that'll look bad.
It'll look bad, and also we have this big plan that's all going down today.
Right.
So I can't change strategy too much. We're just going to have to roll with
it. We're going to have to shift.
Shift.
Pivot.
You got it. You got it. So yeah, so that's what he's doing. So there's a whole bunch of commotion down in this village. People doing things, whatever. It's a village.
Yeah.
And then he has his Torne Lana Siet dude, the Dragonsworn. And this is when it kind of gets weird, where Iteraldo says, he says now or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then like almost as if the soldiers heard him, clearly not, they come out. Because it's all timed perfectly.
Okay.
So he knows that the crazy guy, Dragonsworn guy, with his like 200 Terrabon soldiers, they come out of the woods and start like causing a commotion to
rile everyone up.
Well, to, like, notify the village, like, hey, there's attackers. Look over here.
So the villagers can get to safety. Because there's, like, children and there's, like, all sorts of
stuff. Not even the villagers are, like, mediocrely important.
Oh, okay. That's just what I noted.
He's drawing the army, the Shanshan soldiers, he's drawing them
out to
distract.
Okay.
There's one distraction team.
Well, also, the villagers run for safety.
They do, and most of them do. Not all of them do. Some of them don't make it.
No?
The Shanshan soldiers literally trample a bunch of villagers in their own street.
Wrong. I'm going to show you you're wrong.
Okay, explain.
They're goo-goo ghosts. They're ghosts. Ooh,
ghosts. Okay.
They're ghosts.
They are trampled people. Yeah, you're right. I didn't know that. Okay, we're getting way too ahead.
Oh, yeah, no. I wasn't planning on talking about this yet, because that was my big moment. That was my favorite part of this whole perspective.
I never noticed the ghost before.
Whoa! Because I'm kind of hyper-fixated on these ghosts, since that was the
really
most
are.
Interesting thing that happened last book.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're ghosts, man.
Ghost villagers.
They're ghost villagers.
Okay, we got to get there, because none of this makes sense right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, but it's interesting because the Shanshan are definitely not expecting raiders anywhere this deep in their territory.
Yeah, because we are. If you look at it, like, southwest of the map, like, the Shanshan really control all this land.
Yes.
So they really aren't expecting a couple hundred raiders. So right now, all that the villagers and the Shanshan soldiers in the village see are these 200 Dragonsworn Terrabonner guys, like, causing a little bit of commotion up
and
on
the... And aren't they still in stripes? Like the Shanshan stripes or no?
No.
Okay.
No, they did that to like sneak their way this deep.
Oh.
And then they were up because there's a whole backstory with this Tornay guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How he's like, he really wants.
I thought he was the only one who rubbed it up, but everyone still had theirs on.
He really didn't like doing that because he really just wants to fight Shanshan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the issue is like they're causing a little commotion. They're distracting and they're luring all the soldiers out of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And then Iteralda has like 300 bowmen kind of sneaky off to the side.
Like archers. Setting up. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're just going to mass shoot all the enemy once they come out far enough. And that's why the Tornay guy, he's like going too close to the village. He's not supposed to be going that close.
Okay.
Because he's getting too overeager. He should be hanging back more because they need to draw out all the soldiers so that Iteralda can ambush them all.
Okay.
So, and it's just kind of in this scene where we see all the soldiers coming out of the village is when we apparently have more ghosts.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
No, yeah. It is. And you can read it too because
it makes sense. Now that you say it, 100% makes sense.
Because it's just this group of like eight people.
And Iteralda's like, oh man.
Walking around in the street, not a care in their world. And the soldiers are running them down as if they don't even see anybody.
Yeah. And then Iteralda's like, oh, this must be a grizzled veteran commander because he's running down villagers, doesn't even care.
And it's so weird that these people are walking around like they don't even hear the soldiers coming.
Yeah. And then when they go into the town after,
there's no one there.
The bodies aren't there. So weird. Yeah. Yeah. I never even bothered worrying about ghosts.
Ghosts.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because
we're back to our Scooby-Doo mystery.
Even in Crossroads, like, you made me focus so much more on ghosts than I ever cared about in that book. It's so funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like I never cared as much about ghosts.
See?
Yeah, and weevils, and like I never cared about any of that stuff as much, but
yeah.
Hey, okay.
No.
So anyways.
Definitely, the ghosts continue.
Yeah. So, okay, back to the plot points of what's happening with Iteralda. They lure the guys out, the Dragonsworn Terrorbonders are doing their thing, Iteralda basically has to give the order to fire now because, like, they're going to get blown up by the Demani.
Because the Demani and the Suldam are there.
They're literally, like, on the brink of, like, the commander's talking to the Demani and the Suldam. Like, it's going to happen. So he fires, and then they fire again and again and again and again. And they pincushion everybody.
Yeah.
They kill all the soldiers.
What's funny is Iteralda even says a prayer for the dead. And I made a mental note. I was like, well, they did die at some point.
Yeah. Yep. So anyways.
Yeah. And then also he feels a pang because he doesn't like killing women.
Yeah, that too. But, you know, she's dangerous. At least you can feel bad about it.
Yeah.
But as long as it doesn't stop you from doing it when you have to.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's important.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we won the battle. We won the surprise attack. That's good.
Uh-huh.
It's not supposed to be a big, gigantic fight. It was supposed to be like an ambush, and they did it.
And it worked.
Yeah, and it's a little bit sad because apparently it seems like a bunch of Terrorbonners, like the Shanshan loyal Terrorbonner people, did die too in this attack.
Yeah, but they were fighting with the Shanshan.
I mean, but I also understand it's like your options are to just be murdered or enslaved or fight for the people who took you over, who did handily, who have magic and animals.
And who've also been giving your country quite a bit of security and safety.
Yeah, stability that you didn't have before.
Oh, yeah, because it was a disaster before.
Yeah, like, I kind of feel bad for people, you know, it sucks.
Yeah.
War sucks, man. Anyways.
Yes.
Okay. So then, Iteralda's like, okay, don't, because then the Shanshan, who haven't died yet, and the Terrorbonners who haven't died yet, they start retreating, and that's when this Tornay Lana Siet guy
starts charging
after them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Iteralda's like, don't chase them, I really would like you for more of these attacks, so like, don't just leave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they all just kind of like, charge
leave.
Off.
Oh, yeah.
And Iteralda's like, I guess.
Well, that guy's gone.
I guess he's gone now.
Gotta change never my see plan. Him again. Yeah.
Because now he has fewer people, so.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, but now it's time to go burn down the Shanshan stores and supplies.
Let's do it. That was the mission. A lot of stuff for a lot of soldiers that they don't have anymore.
And, you know, he does give the order to warn the villagers to move what they want to save.
Yeah.
So that the fires don't spread to the rest of the village.
That's good.
That's nice.
Yeah, because he's trying to reclaim the land for the Terrorbonners to, like, just keep living in now.
Right.
Doesn't want to actually burn down the entire country and,
that's true.
Ground.
Oh, yeah. Well, and then that's the whole, like, embers thing.
Yeah.
Too.
Well, okay, so a little bit the embers, but also he's like, the big fire I've already started because this was one attack.
Mm.
But there's 20,000 other soldiers all across Terrorbon who are doing these tiny attacks today.
And tomorrow.
Yeah. And probably for the next, like,
Little while.
And then he has to take all of his guys and work his way back up to Eridomen.
See you later. Yeah.
Leave all the Terrabonners in Terrabon.
And hopefully Dishanchen are just like gone.
Well,
I mean, don't follow him.
Or at least they lose a lot of their footholds because there's so many tiny little attacks. Like, how do you fight back against
that? Right, yeah.
It's not like one big coordinated assault on one of their borders. It's all inside the house. It's inside their own nation that they've taken here. So.
Yeah, and this guy we just get. He's such a great captain. He's got plans on plans on plans on plans.
Except for...
Unless the Dragon Reborn himself suddenly appears in front of
him. Oh, no.
And I was like, is that a foreshadow?
Yeah, but like how and why would Rand ever be here?
It'll be by accident, you know?
Oh, okay, yeah. It's like, what are you doing here?
Yeah. He'll be like, I was looking for Perrin.
It's crazy.
I sent him on a mission a long time ago. I haven't heard from him.
Perrin's not here, man.
Yeah. Turns out Rand like forgot Perrin existed and forgot Perrin had a mission.
That might be accurate.
And... hasn't been thinking about that at all.
What about the Rand Massima meetup that is supposed to happen?
Yeah.
What about that one?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Sure.
It's crazy.
We'll see. They'll all have the same meeting. It'll all be with Suroth and or Tuon.
Who knows?
Who's to say? Because that's where we left off last
time. Right, yeah.
We didn't really do the where we left off last time.
That's okay.
With Crossroads, but...
It's fine.
Here we are.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yeah, so the whole thing, just to like put a nice little bow on this, so Itteraldo wants to work his way back up to Eridomen, and he is thinking he wants the Shanshin to chase him, basically, because then he can spring his trap.
Ooh.
But then he also thinks like, and if they don't chase me, then at least I'll be back in Eridomen without those stupid Terrabonners. I don't actually know if the Terrabon hate is as much as...
Well, and it's interesting, too, because it does feel like he also has a plan... for something about the king and another lady, and I was wondering if that was Grandal, or if that was just some other lady.
Yeah, well, we don't really know.
Oh, because I was wondering...
The king was giving all those crazy orders.
I know, he specifically... I didn't even write it down, I'm just remembering it now.
Allegedly.
There was some lady that he was like, I'm going to bring news to her, and then I was wondering if it was Grandal's fake name.
Okay.
You know? Who sent him the note about...
Right.
The Gray Man, fake Gray Man story a long time ago.
Yeah.
There's just too many.
It's a lot. It's okay. We're here. We're having fun. It's good.
Because that did happen.
Yeah.
I didn't make that up.
No, that did. Okay. Yeah, that happened.
Okay. It was a full book ago.
Yeah. It was wild.
Okay. That's fun.
Cool.
So next episode, three perspectives.
The next three perspectives.
Cool. Yep. I will reread them.
The three perspectives.
Okay.
Okay. There's your warning. Okay.
Okay, so before we run into any more inconsequential ghosts, I'm going to say that this is part of the pattern now.
Yeah, it's part of the pattern.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. The Wheel Weaves is hosted and edited by Danny and Brett, produced by Danny and Brett, with Passion Socks, Cody Feltz, Benjamin, Michelle O'Brien, Jonathan Reese, Jamie Young, Megan Smiley, Jared Berg, Ricky Morissette, Lance Barden, Charlie Haz, Adam, Hannah Green, Marta Thier, and Michelle Forbes, with music by Audionautix. Be sure to check out our Patreon page if you're interested in supporting us and the podcast. We'd love to send you some Patreon-exclusive merch as a thank you, plus you'll gain access to our episodes earlier than everyone else, and at the time of this recording, we have over 40 bonus episodes for your listening pleasure. You can find all that and more at patreon.com/thewheelweavespodcast. For general information about our show... and information like how to send us shot glasses, how to join our Discord, and how to get in touch with us, visit thewheelweavespodcast.com. And as always, please be sure to give us that 5-star review because it really does make a huge difference helping people find us. And if you put your Instagram or Twitter handle in your 5-star review on Apple, we select reviews at random to send people some exclusive merch as a thank you. So be sure to do that so you can grab some cool stickers and bookmarks. Be sure to tell a friend, Riyadh, because referrals really are the best compliment. Thanks again for listening. This really is part of the pattern now.